Good afternoon. Welcome to the 330 Sports Show. Today is Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. Hope everyone enjoyed the eclipse yesterday. Joe, I saw you. You saw a full totality, correct?
Amazing.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. I was in the 99.7% area, so I saw roughly a total eclipse, but not exactly 100%. But so your experience, you know, this is kind of like, it's basically in this area, it's once in a lifetime. The next one's 2099. So I don't know about you, but I'm going to be dead by then. But in 2099, just do the math. I mean, I'll be 100. I'll be 110, 112 years old.
They're going to extend life, and they're going to allow you to walk around in a meat suit that is.
I will actually say, I was listening to this guy recently on Joe Rogan, who he's this guy who was the first inventor of AI on with music. And he's saying AI now is to the point where, you know, you live a year, we can, you age a year. He's like, pretty soon it's going to be, you live a year, you age 8 months. Pretty soon you live a year, you age 6 months, something like that. So to the point, maybe we will, some of us, you know, we'll be able to make it to the next eclipse, but I'm not counting on it. So, you know.
All right. So I asked my kid and my wife this, if they roll out the pill that allows you to live infinitely.
Yeah.
Do you take it?
Only one pill.
Just one pill. Mm. You're alive for good.
And do you stay the same age you are currently?
Right now.
You can keep getting smarter and smarter. Yep. Yeah, I would be more likely to take it than not. You?
Well, I'm There's thinking like it depends on like the era that I'm in. If life is sucking, mm-hmm. like there's nothing that you would want less than to make that last forever. But if it's like Interview with a Vampire where they just live forever and they, you know, make major bank and they can get away with killing people, like maybe I'm in.
You have future plans of that?
Hey, absolutely.
Now, like what, once you take this pill, like what's the repercussions?
Nothing. No,
see, just like to me, I mean, obviously you're going to outlive family and friends and that would suck. But I mean, that could happen as you live now. You know, that's part of life. People die. But according to your plan, you wouldn't have to go through the worst part of that. So I don't know. I think.
All right. Second one, closely connected. Yeah. So you get a chance to go on a rocket ship, goes outer space. Mm-hmm. You're on this ship that travels like close to the speed of light. So for every day that you travel, 8 years on Earth has gone by.
Yeah.
So by the time you get back, there's really nobody that you know will be alive. It'll be hundreds of years in the future. Do you take the trip?
I'm not interested in that. No.
Space just isn't that.
It's important. Not for me. No, it's not. I know everyone and all these rich assholes want to go to the moon and go to Mars. It's like, well, I'll let them go. Let them be the guinea pig. And then if we figure it out and it's good, hey, go for it. And then maybe I'll join you. But no interest right now.
So what do you think of the eclipse people who thought the world was going to end because of it?
And I think they're batshit crazy. Do they know what year it is? Now, I have no idea if this is true or not, but I heard way back in like the 500s, which would be the 6th century, there was some war going on, and then literally the eclipse happened during the like a full totality eclipse, and then they stopped fighting and like signed a treaty because they thought that was like a sign from God or like the end of the world or a biblical type event. Now, without technology, without science, you might think that today you don't really have that excuse. So for those people that thought, you know, 2012 was the end of the world, or you're drinking the Kool-Aid so the spaceship will come down, or in your cult or whatever, hey, to each their own, but I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid. So I don't get it. Everyone's got their right to think however they want, but the end of the world because of a solar eclipse,
Well, think about how many thousands of years people have thought this is the year for the end of the world. They've been predicting that since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Why are we so eager see ourselves off?
It's like a movie, right? Where people, you want to go to that blockbuster summer movie where Independence Day, where the aliens come down and blow everybody up and take over the world, or Armageddon, you know, where there's a meteor coming for, it's like all these people love to watch other people. here's my fear, surviving that. And then you don't have the people that make the food, that like do all the hard tasks, you know. You'd have to self-survive, self-sustain, if you were one of the people that actually survived that. To me, that's almost scarier.
Well, all you jackoffs that made fun of preppers, I would just take a little bit of satisfaction into taking my green beans that I just grew and be like, nope.
Here's what I'm counting on, that I know someone that's a prepper, and they get wiped out, and I just
take their shit.
Take their shit. Why not?
That is my, I want to encourage everybody who's listening to that, at least know one prepper friend that you stay friendly enough. Make sure they have something like grenades and like high octane stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, there's all these apocalyptic type shows, even the one with like the mushroom ones. It's called it was like the HBO one where like people come down and get infected by, I forget what it's called, but like it's The Last of Us is what the show's called. And basically there's this these mushroom type people that like get caught up and they have to survive this. But I don't know, I went off the rails there.
Yeah. Well, like I love a dystopian storyline.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
You've mentioned, you've recommended a bunch of stories.
Oh, I got a good one that we haven't talked about yet.
But what caught me off guard is, what place can an eclipse play?
None.
In how the world's going to end? Like 2 minutes lack of sunshine. If that's all it takes to send us back to the Stone Age, we're in big trouble.
I will say though, that eclipse shows how freaking powerful the sun is, because I don't know where you were. I stayed at home. Like I was in Canfield, and like I said, about 99 point whatever percent totality. And at about 3:16 yesterday was like our peak. I saw birds like flying back into trees. Everything got quiet. The temperature dropped like 15 degrees. You could feel it. And it looked like, at 3:00, it looked like sunset. It was awesome. And that to me was the coolest part. But again, that shows how powerful that sun is, because what it takes light from the sun, 8 minutes to get to the earth. Mm-hmm. And that's traveling at the speed of light. And that shows just how powerful, if something goes wrong with the sun, we're all in trouble there. But with an eclipse, it's just like, it's literally, I didn't know this, and I should have asked Andrew about this last week when he was on, but the moon is 400 times smaller than the sun, and the sun is 400 times further away from the earth than the moon. So that's why it, like, perfect math that it just like syncs up however many years.
That blows
years.
My mind.
That, it's like amazing. It almost feels like, that can't be just coincidence. You know what I mean? And like, there's those conspiracy theorists about the moon and stuff like that with like, have you ever heard that? Like the moon actually is like a base, and there's actually, it's like hollow and stuff like that. I don't believe that, but people out there do.
It's more believable to me that this is a simulation, because that sounds like a programmer that put in 400 and like, how far is away? Oh, 400 times.
Yeah, right,
like,
right.
Perfect proportions to block it out completely.
Exactly.
Something's to that.
Yeah, that's pretty neat though. And like, you know, it only happens every, like it has to be a new moon. The way it only will go over certain parts of the earth. So like I said, Northern Ohio the next time, 2099. And then, you know, it just doesn't happen very often. The next one in the continental United States is 2045. So, I mean, for those people that are like, oh, it's not that big of a deal, it kind of is. It's like this happens like once a generation in the United States. It might happen where you live once every couple hundred years. I think they were saying 1806 was the last time it happened in in northern northeast Ohio.
So. I was blown away by how many people took trips to come see this. Like, mm-hmm. we got lucky. It's in our backyard, like within an hour from totality. And, you know, like if you saw the interstates yesterday and how blocked they were,
yes,
that was amazing.
Yes. I live not too far from like Tippecanoe and Leffingwell. And from Leffingwell going down to Tippecanoe, I can see the turnpike. It was backed up for miles, and Route 11's right by there. And I could see like, it was gridlock. So I was like, part of me was like, yeah, you know, 100% would have been cool. I saw, you know, I saw a bunch of videos and, you know, people we've had on the show, like Andrew was up in like the Geneva area. Alexis Walters, who's been on the show before, she's a meteorologist up in Cleveland. She was actually up in a helicopter filming it. I thought that was really cool. Out in Lordstown, they had an event that was really neat. So the guy from Ward Beecher over at the planetarium at YSU was running that. I just thought all of it was so cool to watch. And, you know, it's like now we can kind of turn the page on the eclipse and stuff, but you can also maybe take the time to appreciate how cool. And I don't know about you, but events like that make me feel, in a good way, how insignificant we actually are. You know what sure. I mean? It's like everything that surrounds you and like you're a tiny particle of sand on a rock that's floating around the universe. And like you get to see something like that. And it's just, it blows my mind. So it's just awesome. Just awesome. So any other solar eclipse thoughts? Well,
I did the whole Twister thing where took all back roads out that way. Mm-hmm. I headed out towards Alliance and Worcester. Yeah. But I knew I didn't want to get tied up on the freeway. So I took like those country dirt roads.
Oh, it's the best.
I'd love, like, I drive around in a motorhome. So dirt mm-hmm. roads and gravel roads are probably not the best deal.
Yeah.
But I really love exploring those small roads mm-hmm. in backcountry nowhere.
Mm-hmm. And did you get like the full like 3 minutes or
oh, yeah.
3.5 minutes? Yep. That's pretty awesome because, you know, where I was, I don't know how long, you know, the majority lasted, but it felt like a long time. You know, and you're kind of living in that moment, but that's something to me. It's like, you know, my daughter was there. My son's only one. So we weren't going to put glasses on him and have him look up. But for my daughter, she loved it. Like, and she did like a school assignment for it for preschool tomorrow, but she was like drawing what the moon looked like. And I like little things like that. Like I will remember now until the day I die, you know? So I it's just like once in those lifetimes of things, but I saw like Jackie from the Vindies posted. She's like, now we're getting a little out of hand. Cause like Giant Eagle put out some cakes that said I was there for the eclipse. It's like, I don't need to go that far. So I thought stuff like that was pretty funny, but you know, at the same time, this is like a once in a lifetime thing, but hopefully everyone could appreciate it. And, you know, I didn't need to be taking pictures and stuff
like
that.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we say all the time, like, aliens and mm-hmm. things that are hard to believe. We never get good pictures of. I took 100 pictures of the eclipse. Not one of them came out to represent what I was actually looking
at. Did you have, like, some sort of filter?
I tried a filter. I tried low light. I tried high mac. I tried every setting on my phone. I got this blob.
I was told you have to have, whether you're looking in a telescope, your phone, you have to have the certain type of lens to protect your lens. But I don't know.
How many times did you look at the sun without your glasses? What?
I did twice. And I also noticed on Twitter or X last night trending was like optometry.
So, brought to you by sellers of the glasses and opticians.
Optometrists.
There you go.
They're probably going to be very busy in the next, because if you even if I glance, we have, you know, one of those halo lights up here. If I glance at that for like a second, you close your eyes real quick, you can see it. But like, if you look up at the sun, and thank God too, that's another thing too. We dodged a bullet because there was a lot of clouds yesterday. Yesterday morning was rainy and kind of really overcast. And then it cleared. So we got really, really lucky. yesterday.
Another interesting part about it is like when the eclipse was almost hitting totality, where there was just a little sliver, mm-hmm. I'm like looking around and everything is still light. I'm like, we don't need that whole 100% of the sun. Just give me a sliver. That's a waste of energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Just think though, harnessing that energy from the sun, what that could do. Like, I mean, you don't want the power in the wrong people's hands, but what you could do with that. And that shows like, you know, and this isn't a political topic, but it's like, I mean, I've seen people outlawing, what do they even call them? Like the sun panels. It's like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Like, pretty soon
outlawing,
like there's places you can't build them.
Okay.
Because they want that for whatever farmland or whatever. It's like, if you harness that energy from the sun, I mean, my God, you know, just think of all the, you know, stuff you could do with that energy. You know, it's free too, you know.
And I'm a little disappointed in our solar technology and how much of the energy we're able to capture.
Yeah.
Because we're, you know, nuclear plants, like that was most disappointing thing when I figured out like how a nuclear plant worked.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking like we're harnessing the energy of an atom and we're creating this expression of energy. And you know how we're powering things? By using it to boil water and running a steam engine. I'm like, really? Right. Like, you can't figure out a better way to capture that massive amount of energy release?
And those people are way smarter than me. So I can't talk trash on them, but at the same
time. Oh, I can.
Yeah.
We need to do better.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. Well, you're a science guy. You love, like, I love science, but I think you come down here. If anyone is ever down here at Youngstown Studio, you look around, you see Musk, you see Edison, you see Tesla, you see great scientific minds around this place. And, you know, those are kind of your idols,
you know?
And it's like those people paved the way for what we are doing now. Just imagine if we get a couple more of those guys that can, or girls, and can collaborate. Put those great minds together and see where we can go. But if you think about where we were 200 years ago with technology, even 20 years ago with where we were for technology to where we are now, just imagine like where we're going to be in 20 years from now. It's mind blowing. So that is of course, if another solar eclipse doesn't kill us all, right? By the doomsday people.
That's likely.
2045.
I'm
going to
say my goodbyes now.
2045. Cheers to everyone. All right. So hopefully everyone enjoyed that. That was awesome yesterday. There were so many great, great things that happened this weekend. And in the city of Cleveland was the heart of the eclipse. My sister and my mom were in Waco, Texas this past weekend. And they were on a flight back from Dallas yesterday, and they were in the path of the totality with the flight. They even had like a news crew on that. So that I thought that was kind of cool, but like the city of Cleveland was one of the hotbeds, Dallas, Cleveland, and I believe like Indianapolis and a few other cities. There's a city down in Mexico. So this passed through a lot of major, major cities, and that was really, really, really cool. This was my favorite picture I did see from yesterday. And I mean, you look at the sky, this is Terminal Tower in Cleveland, and the bottom right illustrates what that looked like, you know, from close up above it. I mean, that is 317, I believe, in the daytime, what it looked like. I mean, that is just so cool. And you look around, like, you know, I put the 330 logo up there, but like the rest of that was black. It was like it was nighttime out in Cleveland. And
now, from here, really with cool with your percentage, were you able to see any stars?
I could not see stars. So, and that was another thing Andrew said, like you could probably see like three or four planets. You could see some stars. I did not. Did you?
Yeah,
you
for did? Sure. It was a night sky when that thing hit, and it was total blackout before the main ring came out. You could see the whole night sky.
And I had some people I knew that were in Medina, and they were in the path of totality, and they were kind of pointing it out on social media. I think they put like a couple, like, this is Venus, this is Jupiter, or whatever planets it was. But I thought that was really, really cool. Okay. So I didn't get the complete darkness, but you know,
next time.
Next time, 2045, we'll see, wherever that might be. So I do want to point out a couple other big winners this weekend. I will point out the city of Cleveland. I heard amazing things this weekend. I unfortunately wasn't able to get up there, but they hosted the Women's Final Four, which had the greatest ratings in all of women's sports this past weekend. And congratulations to South Carolina, who won the national title, going 38-0. But Caitlin Clark was the big winner of that weekend, just notoriety, name, lifting up the women's game. And then last night, UConn men go back-to-back, win back-to-back national titles, Dan Hurley and his squad. So I do want to bring up one thing about Caitlin Clark that I was thinking about. And I want to pose it to you from a business perspective. So Caitlin Clark, we all know, even if you don't follow basketball, you've heard the name Caitlin Clark over the past, whatever, couple months. She took down all the women's records. She took down the all-time men's and women's scoring record. This year, she averaged 31.6 points a game. Excuse me, I'm battling through a cough here. 7.4 rebounds a game and 8.9 assists per game. She led the nation in not only scoring, but assists per game, which is unbelievable. She was the National Player of the Year. Both this year, this season and last season, Iowa got to the championship game and unfortunately lost. So they got there, they just didn't finish. Now, here's the thing. She is assumed to be the number one player in the WNBA draft. Now, I didn't look up salaries and stuff, but listening to another radio show, they said her slotted salary coming into the WNBA would be about $75,000 next year as the number one pick. The main stars in the WNBA end up getting about $250,000, $300,000, which is not bad money, but you compare that to the NBA, and I get it. This is not going to be a men's sports versus women's sports, but where my point was going with that, Caitlin Clark in the world of NIL, now in college hoops, she could earn a hell of a lot more money. Going back to Iowa, she could earn more than any man, any of the college football players, any of the college basketball players. So if you were Caitlin Clark, you don't look anything like her, by the way, but if you were Caitlin Clark and you were the best female college basketball player I think her game like transcends sports in the sense of she's become so popular. Men are watching, women are watching, kids are watching, but she's getting all these advertising deals. So what would you do if you were her? Would you go back to Iowa for another season? She does, I believe, have another year of eligibility. Or would you go to the WNBA as the number one pick, raise that league up, hopefully, a little bit more, and still be able to cash in on advertising? I mean, NBA players get millions and millions from endorsement deals. So I would imagine she would be able to do that too. So if you were her, what would you do?
Do you want my in poor taste response?
You can come at me however you want. Okay, I'm just posing a question.
So I think what she should do is get that NIL money mm-hmm. as long as it hangs out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hormone therapies for transgenderism is very cheap. I think she should join the ranks of the men and get the NBA salary.
Okay. All right. You went there.
I did.
Now
it's more money. If anybody knows, it's more money.
It's a lot more money in the NBA because you know there is something to be said. It's like supply and demand. We were talking about that before the show. So
now, do you watch WNBA? I mean, I know you said you do not want to do the men's versus women.
I have bet on WNBA games before, so but I've never watched them.
Why? Like the sport. I've watched a couple games and it's not terrible. Like not to have a fan following, it surprises me. And I don't know what that's attributed to.
I think there's a couple reasons. One, I believe they start play in the summer, and the summer is probably the worst time for sports because everyone wants to be outside. Yeah. You want to be swimming. You're taking vacations. You're doing everything else but watching sports. Even baseball has this problem, you know? So I think that's one thing. I think it's another thing too. It's like interest level. It's like, if you don't know, basketball especially is a game. It's like they don't wear helmets. You look at them, you know, you can look at them and recognize them and almost feel like, not like you know them on a personal level, but like I feel like Caitlin Clark has got a lot of zest, a lot of publicity, because she kind of looks like just that like all-American girl. You know, she's not like, and this is, I don't want to get like canceled for saying this. She's not too pretty. She's not ugly. She's like, she's a really cute girl. She's very athletic. She's a great player. She shoots the three like Steph Curry. Like she steps back like 30, you know, can hit 30 footers. But she's also like talks a little bit of trash. She's got a little bit of like edge to her. But she's also, if you listen to her in interviews, she is so intelligent. She's speaks very well. She answers the questions very thoughtfully, very intelligently. So I think a lot of people can relate to her. And the fact that she went to Iowa, she's like a Midwest kid. I think that a lot of sections of the country can relate to that too. So I don't know.
Even people who don't follow NBA, they can name 20 players
probably
that are high profile. Mm-hmm. The WNBA, not so much. They need some high profile people that people can connect with. That's what they're missing.
And I think this is why I would advocate for her to go to the WNBA, because it lifts that sport up.
I'm with you.
And you know, and she's still going to make her money. I saw like Ice Cube runs this like big three league. He offered her $5 million to play. And it's like and I think she would do well on that because it's half court. It's, you know, this and that. She can be a shooter. But here's what, and I told Andrew this last week too, when he was on, the thing that drives me nuts is when people post like, how good would Caitlin Clark be in the NBA? It's like, the answer is not good, you know, but let's let her be good, and not just be good, be great at the women's game. But I mean, she's 6 foot tall, which is for a woman, very tall. But she's athletic, but in the NBA, 6 foot tall, you have to be the fastest, most athletic, best ball handler on the court.
6 foot is Spud Webb to today's
exactly
standard.
Exactly. I bet you if you averaged out all the players, the average player height, and I'm just gonna say, is probably 6'5" in the NBA. The average player height. You got Victor Wembanyama, who's 7'4", and you probably have a handful of guys that are under 6 foot tall, but you know, it's not many. But the strength, the physicality, the all that stuff. And it's not just an offensive game where you can put her in a corner, like on, like in the NFL, if she was a specialist, like a kicker or something. No, she's going to be exposed to having to guard a bigger, faster, stronger player too. So it's not just on offense, it's on defense. So the reason I wanted to point that out was because I think it's a little bit of an insult to her and a little bit of an insult to the NBA players, because it's like, she is great at her own sport, but it's an insult to even the worst NBA player, who might be, you know, this guy who has worked his butt off, played 5 years of college basketball, you know, is in the gym every day, that might be 6'4", 240, you know, and just gets after it. And she's not going to be able to guard that guy. And no offense to her, but that's just, it's nature, you know. It's like, is she a better shooter than him? Probably, but it's not, it's apples and oranges. And she's a great athlete. Let her be great and do her thing. And hopefully that didn't come off negatively towards her, because I meant this as a positive thing. But
well, another element of NIL is that you'll have college kids, especially in this ranks, wanting to stay in college, like ninth year freshman kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Depriving the true freshmen coming through of spots because they don't want to leave. They don't want to go make it WNBA money. Mm-hmm. They'd like the NIL money.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And a lot of college football guys, especially, are staying. Ohio State has experienced this year. Ohio State, a lot of guys opted to stay in school as opposed to go to the NFL, where they maybe were second, third, fourth round draft picks. You go back to school, you're making $600,000, you know, and you're just kicking it down the road 1 year. You know, you go to the NFL next year, maybe you improve your draft stock. So we'll see. All right. One more college basketball item before we shift to the men's game this time. Now, Joe, I'm going to ask you this question. There were four Final Four teams this year. We had Alabama, North Carolina State, Purdue, and UConn. So out of those four teams, you got the starting lineups, so 20 players. Out of those 20 players from Alabama, NC State, Purdue, and UConn, how many players of those 20 started at that said school?
Oh, man, I bet you it's half now.
Okay, so Alabama has one.
Holy crap.
NC State, zero.
Oh, my God.
None of their starting lineup started at NC State. Purdue had four, and UConn had three. So what's that? 3, 4, 7, 8 out of 20. 8 out of 20 of the starting lineup of the Final Four teams in the men's started at that said school. So 12 of those players transferred in from other schools. So there's something to be said about the transfer portal. That might be a good thing for some schools, might be a good thing for some players.
Do you know the stats on Gonzaga? I always want to know. Like, I think those guys are loyalists. I think all of them were originals.
Gonzaga, I mean, they might have had a better run, but they ended up going against UConn, which was an absolute buzzsaw the last 2 years. But I'll find that out. Okay. I'll find Gonzaga's starting lineup out for
you'll
you.
Text me at 2 o'clock.
I will. Yeah, Joe.
All of them.
All five starters from Yakima, Washington. All right. All right. Here's a question for you. All right. Have you heard of the 9-9-9 challenge?
No.
Okay. So a baseball game has how many innings?
Nine innings.
At least in the major leagues. So 9 innings. Could you, this is just a yes or no, and I'll let you retort to this question. Could you drink 9 beers and have 9 hot dogs in 9 innings of baseball?
No.
Okay.
No.
I thought the answer would be no, but how many beers plus hot dogs do you think you can have total?
I could probably do 3 hot dogs and 3 beers.
Okay, so 6. So that's your 69 challenge. So Joe, so the 9-9-9 challenge. So technically you have to consume 18 things, 9 beers, 9 hot dogs in 9 innings. Over a 3-hour game, roughly. That sounds incredibly challenging to me, even at my peak drinking years. And if you go and you don't eat at all beforehand, that also sounds really expensive too. Like was a beer, let's just say a beer costs $10 and a hot dog costs $5. So we're talking $90 in beer and 45. So we're talking $135 just to complete this challenge. One, that sounds financially irresponsible. Two, it sounds irresponsible towards your gut. And three, it sounds not very fun, at least towards the latter innings.
Brought to you by Oscar Mayer, Anheuser-Busch, and rehab facilities across the country.
And Pepto-Bismol. We'll throw them in there for the next day. So the 9-9-9 challenge. I'm very curious how many people think they could do this. Like, so if we take just a broad poll over the Mahoning Valley. So Mahoning, Trumbull, Columbiana counties, how many people out of, let's say, 100,000 could do that?
10%.
Do you say
10%? Yeah, 10% are good, hefty drinkers.
Okay.
They're big, masculine hot dog eaters.
That sounds like such an insult, you big hot dog eater.
All right. What about you? How many deep can you go?
I see what you did there. I think I could go heavy one way or the other. I don't think I could do both. I am not a big beer drinker. Do you ever drink like a couple beers and then you just feel like weighted down and like heavy?
That's why I said 3 is
that's
like
why,
my max.
That's why we like bourbon, because you can sip it. You get a little bit of a nicer buzz and stuff with that. It's smoother.
So let's just take beer out of it.
Yeah.
If you were just sipping bourbon, how many hot dogs can you take down?
I think at most 5.
5, okay.
Yeah. And they got to have ketchup and mustard on it too. I can't eat it plain. That's gross. And those, you know, and we're not talking friggin' footlongs, or we're talking a normal size hot dog.
I'm not commenting in this thread at all. Like, okay. I'm staying away from it.
All right.
Please don't clip it
where I'm saying hot dog like
the
this.
The size matters.
Yes, it does matter. We want the average normal size hot dogs.
But have you seen how they prepare those hot dogs?
No,
the stadium?
I don't want to know.
They're so like gross. Yeah. Like, they're so gross.
To me, like, hot dogs doesn't even sound good unless I'm grilling my own at home.
All right. Hey, dude, it's all you. All right, let me reel it back.
Yeah.
So you're at the stadium and you're not buying beer and hot dogs. What is your go-to food at a stadium?
I've never been like a big eater at like a game of any sort, but I'd probably go nachos.
I'm with you.
And with like the jalapenos, yes, on them, a little bit of cheese. That's probably my go-to. You know, it's like maybe a, you know, if you don't want to get like messy or something too, maybe a pretzel or something like that.
Popcorn maybe.
But yeah, how about you? Same thing?
Yeah, same thing. Nachos are my go-to. Yeah. Water, I'm not a big anything drinker. Like, if they can't serve me bourbon, I'm gonna get water.
Like, and every now and then, if it's like a day like today, it's 75 degrees, it's hot, it's, you know, I'll have a beer. That sounds good. But like, 9 beers in 9 innings, no thanks.
It's, you know, it's the price per beer that gets me. It doesn't even matter what kind it is. Yeah. Like, $10 for a beer is rough.
Yeah, you're going into your kid's 529 plan just to drink during the game. Speaking of baseball, the Cleveland Guardians are off to an unbelievable start. They are the second best ERA team in the league, 2.05. They're 8-2 on the season. So they took 3 out of 4 from the A's. They took 2 out of 3 from the Mariners. They took 2 from the Twins, and last night they beat up the White Sox, and they will take them on again tonight. Unfortunately, excuse me, the only bad news for the Guardians, Shane Bieber, ace pitcher, is going to undergo Tommy John surgery, and that will put him out for the year and most likely end his career with the Guardians, because he's a free agent after this year. He's going to get paid. The only silver lining of this, and it's, you kind of feel bad for him, is he was on track to get probably $100+ million contract, multi-year contract with some team. That may happen still. It probably won't now. They'll probably have to see how he recovers, but hopefully he heals up quickly, and hopefully it's not the last time we see him pitch for the Guardians. But
I was going to ask you, what is Tommy John surgery? What the heck is it?
Yeah, you know, it's becoming very common now, where you hear a ton of pitchers just throw so hard now. Like, back when, you know, back even like 20 years ago, you know, there might be like one or two guys that could hit like the upper 90s to low hundreds. I think last year there was like 50 pitchers that hit over 100 miles an hour last year. I think they're just putting too much torque and velocity from their elbow and their shoulders onto the baseball. It's just like, your body can only handle so much. Like, we've talked about this with NFL athletes too. It's like, there's more ACL injuries, there's more, you know, fine soft tissue injuries. Tommy John, from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, and anyone that's smarter than me out there, but I believe it's an elbow injury. And it's basically kind of like an ACL. It's like a almost a full year recovery. So theoretically, he'd be back for the start of next season, but you know, that could linger on into May and June of next year too, if he's not fully healthy. But I think it's just now the Players Association for Baseball has said they want an investigation looked into the pitch clock, because they feel like the pitchers are speeding up their normal process and not going through their normal routine, because they're actually feeling like they're having to beat this clock, and they're putting some blame onto that. I don't know if I believe that or not, but for Shane Bieber, for the Atlanta Braves, his name is Spencer Strider. He's like their ace pitcher. He's dealing with something similar. He hasn't been fully ruled out yet, but it's looking like that. But enough of these guys that are aces on their team go out, they'll be more of, I mean, these guys are, you know, they only pitch once every 5 days, but they are one of the most important players on the team. You know, they can determine the outcome of a game every five games. You know, that's 20% of your games. And you know, enough of these guys go down that are making $20, $30, $40 million a year. Clubs are not going to be too happy with that. So it's unfortunate and it stinks. And Shane Bieber, he was off to like a 2-0 start, hadn't given up a run yet this season. And it's just unfortunate. So
the first thing I thought of is the drone. I figured this was a symptom of getting your finger sliced open with a drone.
Trevor Bauer.
Oh,
yeah.
Trevor Bauer.
Yeah. That was one of the ugliest things I've ever seen. Like when he went out and pitched that game and the blood was dripping from his, that was the AL championship series too, in 2016. So yeah, Trevor Bauer is trying to get back into the major leagues. He's had some off the field issues.
Well, it's good to know that this is just a connected thing from playing baseball, not an off the field.
Yeah. Yeah.
Misbehavior.
No. Yeah. No, this is something. And I don't exactly know what causes it. I feel like it's just like tendon or something just like can reaches its max point. And, you know, like an ACL, yeah. There's half the time it's like non-contact that, you know, and Cleveland, my God, could we get some good karma too? It's like Nick Chubb, Deshaun Watson. You know, we have a whole host of players out. Then you had the Cavs have had all these injuries. And they've been struggling with that. And then you lose the Guardians off to an amazing start, lose their best pitcher. So just a really frustrating situation. Hopefully good karma ahead for the Guardians. So
now not saying that you don't, but if you had some superpower skill, would you take an insurance policy against injury so that you couldn't, like, if you're a singer, your voice,
yeah,
running back, your body or your,
yeah,
throwing arm or whatever.
If I remember right, I don't know if I'm sure it's still around, but there used to be an insurance company out of London, I believe, called Lords of London, that would take, like, when Peyton Manning was he went back to school his senior year, he took out an insurance policy because they were like, you're going to be the number one draft pick. And hell yeah. I mean, you if you're guaranteed money and you take it off the table, you better protect yourself at all costs. That's just my opinion. I don't know if I have a defining skill that they're going to be,
our premiums signing be me low. Up.
Yeah. Our premiums would be very low and the payoff would be very low too. But, you know, hey, if in case I needed to, I would take it out. Yeah. Yeah. You?
Oh, 100%. Like I'm into risk mitigation.
Oh yeah.
And so like, if I go down for the count, I want to make sure that what was going to happen still happens, and mm-hmm, even if it's a little lesser.
Okay.
But that's a lot of risk for a guy like coming out of high school or college and going into the majors, and he gets injured on his first day. Mm-hmm. His whole future's done.
Exactly. And there's some injuries that are more brutal than others. I'm hoping Nick Chubb is going to be back for the start of the year, but he had two major surgeries. So it's like, you know, he's also like 28, I think. And running backs usually have a shelf life till 30, but that guy's a freak of nature. So hopefully he gets back, but we'll see. But, you know, best wishes to all those guys. It stinks. And it's part of playing sports, you know, like injuries are part of the game. It is what it is. But
can I ask you a non-baseball question?
Absolutely.
Your opinion on it? Well, I want to make sure we weren't going to get to this. You weren't talking any kind of boxing, right?
Not today.
Okay.
No. Mm-mm.
In the future?
Maybe. We'll see. Not today.
All right, so Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Is that in the future topic? I don't want to ruin it.
Not today. Go for it though. Oh, I have nothing on the card. Okay. But we'll eventually.
Oh, nice. Well done.
We'll get to Mike Tyson. What, Jake Paul?
Yeah.
We'll get to them eventually. That's in the summer, I think. So.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, the big discussion was the age gap and whether or not a 57-year-old dude could stand up to somebody in their 20s, and so like you're talking about Nick Chubb being at the latter part of his career,
yeah, yeah,
versus a college kid who's, you know, got years ahead of him. What do you think about an athlete like a LeBron James that compete way deep into their career?
Well, in a team sport, I think it's more impressive when it's one-on-one combat, like boxing though. Give me Mike Tyson 10 times out of 10 against whoever. That is one crazy bastard.
And he is ripped. I don't know if you saw him.
He is.
Holy crap.
And he's fucking as batshit crazy as he's ever been. So I will take Mike Tyson 10 times out of 10 against just about anybody. That guy is, I would not say this to his face, but he is a lunatic in the best way for his sport. And I would be interested to know like Pavlik's thought on that. And like, even like Zion or Danny, who we had in here recently, hear what they think about like going against like an older, because they know tricks of the trade that maybe some of those young people don't know. And like, I just think about like when I was younger and I would go play basketball and I was like in the best shape of my life and stuff, playing basketball, like right after college and stuff like that, running up and down. But you go to the Y or go to a high school open gym or something, and like you throw an old guy out there that might not be in quite as good of shape, but they just know how to like manipulate their body or like hit you or like do little things that can like get you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said about that. Like, it's just like that old man strength. Did you ever hear that?
Oh yeah.
Or it's like sometimes like I played at Boardman, and sometimes we'd play like every now and then we'd play a team from like Massillon, or, you know, a team out that maybe would be we'd call them country strong. You know, they might not be the most athletic team, but they would be tough. They'd be physical. And those were sometimes more challenging than those like teams that were just like freakishly athletic. So I don't know.
So if you were to lay $100 to win 10,000 right now, either Tyson knockout, Tyson decision, let's just say an ear biting or some kind of disqualification, or Paul, what would you go?
I get one of those choices.
You get one of those four.
I'd go with the Tyson knockout. Yeah. And hey, you're giving me great odds there. So I will take that all day long. Give me Tyson all day long over. And I think Jake Paul's from Westlake, Ohio, but they don't claim him as far as I know. They don't claim him too much, or at least Cleveland.
He's scrappy.
He's good. And, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But
so you're taking Tyson in a knockout. I take Tyson for 10 grand. All day.
And my chair, I'm slumping down here. So I fixed my chair. All right, let's go to, I did two top five lists today.
Okay.
We're going to go back to back with these. We'll just call it two for Tuesday here. It is Masters week. And before we get into the Masters, I do want to give a shout out to Gianna Clement, who just competed in the U.S. Women's National at Augusta at the Masters. She was in second place going into the final round, but she finished fifth place overall out of all the competitors there. Keep in mind, this girl is 16 years old. She is going against players that are seniors in college, that, you know, so girls that could be 8 years older than her. It's truly amazing what she is doing as an athlete. So she is going to be, I think she's ranked in the top 30 of all amateur women in the entire world. So she is unbelievable. And then Brian Tolnar, who is the PGA pro at Mill Creek Golf Course, his son Preston competed at the drive, chip, and putt down at the Masters this weekend. I believe he finished fifth overall in his age group. So two awesome young athletes that are got to compete at literally maybe the best stage in all of golf. Not maybe, definitely the best stage in all of golf. But the top five lists I want to go over, just in my opinion, I went through all 18 holes of the Masters and I came up with the five prettiest holes. That sounds like a dirty.
I'm staying out of this one. I'm just gonna nod at you.
I just
hot dogs and holes. Hot dogs and holes.
Yeah, we have. you can insinuate
BJ, that's the description of this video. The title of the video: hot dogs and holes.
Hot dogs and holes. But here's in my humble opinion, and I have never been to Augusta. Let me ask you this before we get started. Augusta is on one of the top items on my bucket list of places I've never been to, or sporting event I've never been to. Do you have a bucket list? It doesn't have to be sports. It could be anywhere in the world or anything in the world. Do you have a bucket list item you want to do?
I was intimidated by Columbus's, was it Nicholson course?
Oh, Muirfield.
I never felt that I was good enough to play that course, and I want to one day be good enough to feel like I'd step on it and not make an embarrassment of myself. So there you go.
Okay. I will actually, I go to the Memorial every year that Friday. So, and I usually sit on the 16th hole there. It's a par three. I think it's the 16th. It's one of the par threes there, but it's unbelievable how good these guys are. Unbelievable. It's disgusting how good these players are. But
it's not cheap to play this course at all.
No, and I think you have to be invited, and they have a long list of celebrities and big time players that are in that membership. But yeah, that Muirfield is amazing. And they call it Jack's Place for a reason, because he designed it, and he designed it in the aura of Augusta. So it has a similar feel to it. You can't nature-wise, you can't always, it's not apples and apples, but it's as close as you're going to get. So here's my top five prettiest holes in Augusta at the Masters. The 12th, it is a par 3, 155 yards. It is called the Golden Bell. Every hole is named after a flower, Joe. Another innuendo. There you go. But it is beautiful. We're going to do these quickly because I can't.
He'll just start giggling and we don't want that.
The next one is the 13th, which is obviously, if you're counting, if you're good at math, it's right after the 12th. But it is a par 5. 545 yards. It is called Azalea, which is one of the beautiful flowers down there in Augusta. The next one is the 16th. This is a par 3. This is shout out to Vern Lundquist, one of the best voices in all of sports. This is his final Masters. So if you watch the Masters this weekend, you will hear Vern Lundquist. He only does the 16th hole. So he does all the players that come through. He will announce that hole, and it's unbelievable how good he is. He has a great voice. But par 3, 170 yards. It is called Redbud. The next one is the 3rd. It's a par 4, 350 yards. It is called Flowering Peach. Once again, Joe's giving me looks across. But some of these pictures, if you are watching, it doesn't do it quite justice. It's kind of like the eclipse. It's like once you're there, you see it, or even on TV, it doesn't quite do it justice. And then finally, the 6th hole, once again, another par 3, 180 yards. It is called Juniper, which I believe a juniper is a type of evergreen tree, if I'm recall right. But those are my top 5 prettiest holes in all of Augusta National.
I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast.
Oh, RIP to that guy. The guy Shooter hired.
The big guy.
No, you're never going to make this putt. Just you jackass.
Jackass.
That guy just passed away last week. So rest in peace to that guy. And
jackass guy.
And Chubbs Peterson passed away too recently. So, man, it stinks. But another golf news, Happy Gilmore 2 is going to be going into production. Did you know that?
I did not.
So good stuff. So hopefully in the next 2 years, we'll have Happy Gilmore 2. I'm going to skip the Cavs today because we're running out of time. But let's just say the Cavs have 3 games left. I'm putting them all must win because currently they're sitting in the 5th place in the Eastern Conference. They're guaranteed a playoff berth. But real quick, they are basically a 3, 4, and 5 are all up for grabs in the East. Even the 6th spot is up for grabs. So the Cavs can finish anywhere, in my opinion, from 3rd to 6th, but they got to go out and take care of business and get these last couple wins at home. They're all home games. So finish off strong and get after it. So that's my only Cavs talk today. Now, my favorite show, my favorite comedy that has been on any show ever on TV, movies, whatever, over the last 24 years. This show debuted in the year 2000. It just ended on Sunday. Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David, who is the co-creator of Seinfeld, along with Jerry Seinfeld, they just finished that show off. I'm going to go over my top 5 favorite Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes. Now, they have 12 seasons, 10 episodes per season, so 120 episodes. So I narrowed it down to 5. These are my 5. All I'm going to do is give you the title, what season and what episode, and a quick plot summary. So, and we'll go through it. So I'm going to go in my favorite order. So I'm going to start with number one. It is called The Doll. Season 2, Episode 7. Here's the plot summary. In a classic Curb sequence of misunderstanding, Larry gets branded as a sexual deviant and possible pedophile after trimming the hair of a little girl's doll. It was at the girl's request, and getting caught in compromising positions inside unlocked bathrooms. It is one of the greatest, funniest episodes of TV in the history of TV, in my opinion. If you have not watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, go to Max if you have it. Season 2, Episode 7, you can thank me later.
And I will tell you, I have taken every one of Justin's recommendations, and he is batting 1.000.
I appreciate
that.
I have
loved every one of them.
And this is at the peak of the iceberg. This is like the pinnacle of comedy, if you're interested in comedy. Number two, it is called The Freak Book. It is titled The Freak Book. Season 6, Episode 5. Here's the plot summary. Larry gifts Ted Danson, who plays himself, a coffee table book called Mondo Freaks at his birthday celebration. Danson kicks Larry out of the party after the limo driver that he had guilted Danson into letting inside gets drunk, breaks a vase, and gropes Mary Steenburgen, who is his wife. The following day, Charlie and the drunk chauffeur convinces Larry to pose as him to pick up an important client from the airport. A string of tense, calamitous encounters follow as Larry tussles with, among other people, a group of random mourners, Paul McCartney's ex, Heather Mills, and a tennis legend, John McEnroe. This is one of the funniest episodes of TV. I mean, it's number two, in my opinion, of Curb Your Enthusiasm. So The Doll, The Freak Book. Number three is called Crazy Eyes Killer. Episode 8 of Season 3. The plot summary is, when Wanda Sykes, who's a really funny comic, breaks off her engagement with philandering rapper fiance Crazy Eye Killer, played by Chris Williams, Larry takes blame for the allegedly betraying Crazy Eye's confidence. Larry, in this episode, even, because let's just say Crazy Eye Killer uses the N-word a little bit in the show, and Larry asks him back politely, "Am I your Caucasian?" there's just some great banter back in this one. So that's number three, Crazy Eye Killer. So one, The Doll. Two, The Freak Book. Three, Crazy Eye Killer. Number four, The Carpool Lane. Season 4, Episode 6. The plot summary in this one: Larry, who is desperate to see the Dodgers play, tries unsuccessfully to guilt Marty Funkhauser, who is mourning the recent death of his father, into giving his tickets to him and Jeff. Marty refuses, and Larry happens into tickets of his own. When Jeff bails at the last minute, Larry picks up a prostitute named Monena, who is played by Kim Whitley, so that he can use the carpool lane. If you live in a big city like LA, or New York, or even Cleveland or Chicago, you know that there's a carpool lane. You cannot drive in that carpool lane if you're by yourself. So he picks up a prostitute so he can drive in that lane to get to the Dodgers game quicker. Very, very well thought out episode. Honorable mention before I get to my last one. This past season, there's an episode called Gettysburg Address. I believe it's season 12, episode 6. Check that one out. The Gettysburg Address. It's awesome. So, so good. And the last one I have, number five on my list, is called Palestinian Chicken. Very of times. Larry's Jewish, by the way. This is season 8, episode 3. Throughout 8 seasons of Curb, Larry has always thrived in situation where he calls out annoying and sometimes detestable actions from members of society. In this exceptional episode, Larry's superhero-like ability is celebrated and exploited. He is officially dubbed as a social assassin. In true Larry fashion, it all blows up in his face. However, the meat of this episode comes from Larry's love, Al Abbas, a Palestinian chicken restaurant that is draped with anti-Israeli posters. Larry's loyalties are tested. Does he stay with his friends and his culture, or does he continue to eat delicious chicken and make love to a beautiful Palestinian woman? The episode ends with Larry caught between those two choices and perhaps the most used GIF in Curb Your Enthusiasm history. So those are my top five episodes. Let me run through them real quick. One more time. Palestinian chicken. The carpool lane. Crazy Eye Killer, The Freak Book, and The Doll. Unbelievable stuff, and I will throw in the Gettysburg Address from this past season if you have not seen it. So, so good. So, have you seen the show?
Zero episodes.
Okay. If you're going to watch five, just go watch those five. Most of them are 30 minutes, so it's a really quick watch, but highly, highly, highly recommend. If you like Seinfeld, you will love Curb Your Enthusiasm. So highly recommend it. So we'll wrap up with that. Curb Your Enthusiasm, Masters, Cavs. We didn't get to the Browns today, but there's plenty of NFL draft stuff we'll get to soon. The Eclipse, all kinds of good stuff this week. As of now, we'll let you know about Thursday if we're doing a show or not, but that's all I got for today. Joe, any final comments?
Prettiest holes.
And hot dogs.
And hot dogs.
And Crazy Eye Killer and the carpool lane. Picking up prostitutes. Love it.
What are you doing to me? Like, I used to go to church on Tuesdays.
Yeah, I know. But hey, it's 3:30 to 4:30. It's still this is another type of gospel. So, all right. Appreciate you guys watching. For Joe, I'm Justin. Thanks for watching the 330 Sports Show on Youngstown Studio. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. This is original Youngstown content. Feel free to share our videos and tell your friends about us. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Facebook. Thank you for your support.